annual Pickathon, July 31st through August 2nd. Pickathon is 3 days and 7 stages of performances by a variety of bands such as Tune Yards, Shabazz Palaces, Ty Segall, Leon Bridges, Freakwater, and dozens more. Pickathon takes place at Pendarvis Farm in Happy Valley and features weekend or single day tickets, as well as wooded camping, food trucks, and local beverages. A full list of artists, stage schedule, ticket prices, and transportation options can be found at KBOO.FM/Pickathon2015.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 42 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday through Christmas Eve. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. Also, thanks to Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffeehouse.
Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KBOO program featuring interviews with authors of fiction and nonfiction. I'm your host this week, Leanne Kranz. Our guest today is Walida Imarisha, co-editor of the new anthology, Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements, published by AK Press, a worker-run anarchist publisher in Oakland, California. Walida Imarisha is a prison abolitionist, educator, organizer, writer, filmmaker, and performance poet. She is the respected scholar behind the, quote, "Why Aren't There More Black People in Oregon?" end quote, presentation featuring her Oregon Black History timeline. Walida has traveled all over the state and taught us much about our past and how it directly relates to our present. And today, she's here to talk about the future and our limitless potential to shape it. In the new visionary fiction anthology, Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements, Walida Imarisha and her co-editor, Adrienne Marie Brown, compiled short stories and essays by well-known science fiction writers and social justice activists, including journalist and political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. They were given the opportunity to imagine the future through the lens of science fiction, where anything is possible. The resulting stories reflect the collective fears and dreams of many, I think, who devote their lives to social justice. Where are we headed? What do we hold sacred? How do we want to live? And what must change? And what would that look like? The future isn't always pretty in these stories, but the human spirit, that best part of us that stands up, never gives up hope, surely is beautiful and lies at the heart of this anthology. Welcome, Walida Imarisha.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being our guest.
I'm excited to be here.
In an effort to be transparent, Walida is joining us on the phone today. She had a flat tire, but she still made the effort to join us today, despite that little tragedy. We appreciate your time so much.
Thanks.
So, Walida, to set the stage today with our listeners, can you explain that relationship between science fiction and social justice activism?
Sure. I mean, our idea behind the anthology Octavia's Brood is that all organizing is science fiction, actually. So we feel that the link between science fiction and social change is inextricable. We believe that any time we try to imagine a world without prisons, a world without violence, a world without war, without borders, that's science fiction. We haven't seen that world. But being able to collectively envision those worlds means that we can begin to build them into reality. So we think that all organizing is science fiction. And on the other side, we also think that our movements for social justice absolutely need things like science fiction, because science fiction is the only genre that allows us to step outside of everything we're told is real and possible, the limits that are placed on us in this world. And it's a genre that actually demands we start with the question, well, what kind of world do we want to live in, rather than starting with the question, what is a realistic win?
In your introduction, you said something that really resonated with me. You say, quote, "And for those of us from communities with historic collective trauma, we must understand that each of us is already science fiction, walking around on two legs. Our ancestors dreamed us up and then bent reality to create us." You say that the ancestors in chains were dreaming of generations to come when children would be free. They had no reason to believe this was likely, but together they dreamed of freedom and they brought us into being. And that science fiction writers today are moving forward in what is already a visionary legacy. Very powerful.
Thank you. Yeah, we think it's really important, you know, for oppressed and marginalized peoples, our future has always been deeply rooted in our past. And I think that's one of the failings of more dominant mainstream Western and white science fiction, is the idea of this linear progression towards greatness, which is, I mean, that's a continual myth that we're told, that, you know, white civilization, Western civilization has always been on a linear progression towards greatness. I think rather, when we look at communities of color, and especially oppressed communities of color, we see this idea that the past, the present, and the future all exist as one, that they walk together. And so we absolutely believe that the liberation of the future is built on, you know, the struggles and the visionary work of the past. I think it is incredibly important to recognize that no oppressed peoples, no peoples of color would be where we are today if our ancestors hadn't been courageous enough, brave enough, and visionary enough to dream futures and worlds that they told were utterly impossible, and then do the hard, immensely brutal, sometimes work of making that a reality.
Mm-hmm. You know, I almost cheered when I read this book, because in activist circles, you know, if I ever mention that I write fiction or love to read fiction, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of attitude I get that, you know, that must be nice, honey, but we've got this reality that we're dealing with, and there's so much real factual stuff that we should be taking our time to read and you know, practice within that realm. And you point out that this space is vital for imagining futures that are different than those structured today, and it's vital in the process of decolonization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Oregon-based science fiction writer Ursula K. Le Guin, who, I mean, is amazing and brilliant, has written some incredibly visionary fiction texts like The Dispossessed and so many. You know, she spoke at the National Book Awards last year, and she said that, you know, that we absolutely need those who can remember how to dream of freedom for the future. And I think that that's incredibly important. She located that in writers, right, and specifically in fiction and science fiction writers, that we need, you know, artists and writers who are able to remember how to dream of freedom. And she also, you know, really talked about how that limitation on our imaginations is kind of the number one ways in which we are controlled, mm-hmm. right? If we're told, well, this is how far change can happen, and we accept that, then, you know, we've already been confined. And so, you know, she made a great point where she said, you know, we were told that capitalism will continue forever. And she's like, you know what else we were told would continue forever? The divine right of kings. You know what didn't continue forever? The divine right of kings. In fact, it's an idea now that's completely laughable as a basis for society. And yet people at that time, right, thought there was nothing outside of that way of being governed, that way of living. And it took visionary folks to be able to say, but what if? And I think that our movements for social change have to start saying, but what if? Because if we just accept the realities that we're told, we will never gain true liberation.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Ursula Le Guin. I'd love if you would talk about the science fiction writer Octavia Butler, who inspired this anthology, and was you even named it after her. Can you please tell us a little bit about her and her writing and why you and your co-editor, Adrian Marie Brown, wanted to commemorate her in this way?
Absolutely. I think that for, you know, for Adrian and myself, for almost, I think, every one of the writers in the collection, Octavia Butler's writing has been foundational for us to really not only dream new futures, but to dream new just worlds. Octavia Butler was an incredible science fiction writer. She was a Black feminist. She was an amazing intellectual as well. She won the MacArthur Genius Award, and unfortunately she passed away in 2006, but she wrote books that all embodied what we consider to be visionary fiction, fantastical fiction that is useful in helping us challenge the existing power structures and in dreaming new just worlds. And so, you know, Adrian and I have been fleshing out ideas of what visionary fiction was. What are the principles of visionary fiction? You know, the ideas of centering those voices that have been marginalized, centering those people who live at the intersections of identities, recognizing that change is collective, that it happens from the bottom up, not the top down. And as we're developing these principles, we realize Octavia Butler, to us, embodies every single one of these. And my co-editor, Adrian, was actually already doing Octavia Butler emergent strategy sessions, where she would have organizers read Octavia Butler and then talk about what lessons can we learn that can help strengthen our strategies and tactics and movements to create real change. And so we felt we absolutely wanted to honor her legacy, and in that context of recognizing the work that our ancestors did, honor that much of this work came out of the foundation laid by folks like Octavia Butler.
I learned more about her through reading one of the essays in this book, and one of her key principles seems to be that she seems to focus a lot on change, the fact that it's inevitable, and that we are all participants in that. One of the quotes that you mention in the book is from one of her characters in The Parable of the Sower, the character Omelina. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. There's a quote, "All that you touch, you change. All that you change, changes you. The only lasting truth is change." And that seemed to kind of underscore one of the principles of this book, that adaptation, creative adaptation, is what is required, has always been required of humans, and definitely now.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think that that principle is something that's incredibly important. The essay that you mentioned is by Black horror writer Tanana Reeve Dew, who is an incredible visionary writer herself and filmmaker, and she knew Octavia Butler personally, and that the essay that she wrote that focuses on Octavia Butler and social change, I think, is so powerful to have, you know, Tanana Reeve Dew's brilliance as well as her personal connection with Octavia exploring these ideas. And I think that so many of us, you know, that verse that you mentioned, right, because in the book Parable of the Sower, the main character, Lauren Alamina, is creating in many ways this sort of book that's a cross between a self-help revolutionary field guide and, you know, new kind of religious text called for this idea she has called Earthseed. And so that specific parable, I think, is one that many people I know, including myself, repeat to ourselves, right? I often repeat to myself, the only lasting truth is change, because I think it's really hard sometimes to let go of things. And yet, as folks who are organizers, are activists, are change makers, that is exactly what we long for. And so I think it's incredibly powerful to have this sort of literary exploration of it, and to have a character like Lauren Alamina, who embodies so much that idea that you can hold on to and tell yourself everything's going to be okay. Remember, Lauren went through some rough stuff and she came out stronger and was able, because she accepted change and didn't fight it, to be able to shape change. And I think that that's the really important piece, is not trying to fight change. We want change, but to be able to say change is coming, whether we want it or not. So we can either do the work and lay the foundation we need to begin to shape it, or we can let change run over us and potentially destroy us.
We're speaking with Walida Imarisha, talking about the new sci-fi anthology, Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements. Folks, we are going to be right back after we test our emergency alert system. This is not a Martian invasion. Please stay tuned for more with Walida Imarisha.
Coordinated monthly test of the emergency alert system. This test was originated by the Multnomah County Emergency Management Agency in cooperation with other emergency management agencies, broadcasters, and cable operators. This system informs you of events that pose an immediate threat to your life, health, or property. If this had been an actual emergency requiring immediate action or evacuation, official messages would have followed the alert tone. This test will conclude in 5 seconds.
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO. Our guest today is Walida Imarisha, here to talk about the new anthology she's put together with her co-editor, Adrienne Marie Brown, called Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements. In addition to editing this incredibly moving and unique anthology, Walida Imarisha has also contributed one of the stories to the collection, Black Angel, and she's very graciously agreed to read an excerpt from that this morning. Are you ready to go, Walida?
Sure.
Thank you.
And I'm just going to read an excerpt. It's towards the end of the story, so just so folks know, the main character, her name, she goes by A, just the letter A. She's a fallen angel who is manifested as a grumpy, big-haired black woman, which is, you know, maybe a little autobiographical. And she was kicked out of heaven by God for trying to stop a genocide that was happening on Earth. She couldn't watch humans kill each other one more time. And God said she went against his plan and kicked her out of heaven. So she's on Earth, and she's not happy about it. So that's kind of where we're dropping into. Mm-hmm. A looked up and realized she had walked much further than she usually did on her nightly wandering. The black neighborhood of Harlem had blended into an immigrant one, with bodega signs in at least 3 different languages, ads for international calling cards plastered on every surface. Just as she started to think about turning back, she heard a huge tumult, like 1,000 hearts being ripped apart at once. Screams. No matter what language, she knew the sound of desperate prayers hurtled towards an impassive sky. Without thinking, A sprinted towards the noise. She turned the corner to see pure horror. People poured out of a tenement building like a river of tears. Families, children, elders, all immigrants. They were shoved, driven, beaten by men in bulletproof vests carrying automatic weapons, the kind usually reserved for military warfare. The stomp of boots like bombshells exploding. A line of industrial-sized trucks, each branded Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. Windows of the trucks like angry slitted eyes on a face full of rage. The engines growling, doors bared like teeth. The agents threw people on top of each other into the trucks until they were full, then started on the next. Bodies packed in, shackled together for the forced passage south to the border. A had heard about this. Once it had made its arrest quota set for it by Congress, Congress, ICE no longer had use for the undocumented immigrants it snared. Since the economy had bottomed out, all new prison construction ceased as politicians tried to do triage on the budget. What prisons there were already overflowed with bodies, too often black and brown. But the ingenious and insidious waste not, want not ideology of the system kicked in. After scanning everyone, ICE loaded them into trucks and drove them just across the Mexican border. They sold other humans to the U.S. corporations' giant factories a stone's throw from the border. These corporations bought workers by the truckload. Most didn't last a year, toiling in the unventilated 100-degree-plus heat of the dangerous and toxic production lines. A's heart sank. This was the embodiment of the evil humans do to one another. Even animals don't turn on each other unless they have to. Humans do it at the drop of a hat, the slip of a dollar. She shook her head, disgusted. When A was in heaven, she was an angel of mercy, never an angel of vengeance. Never wielded a fiery sword and wrought terror on those who had done wrong. But no one who saw her this day would have ever guessed that. She threw up her trench coat like a dark storm cloud and unleashed her remaining black wing. It unfurled until it blotted out the glow of the streetlights. Her face twisted almost beyond recognition with rage, and she was more terrible than anyone could ever imagine. Her wing sliced through two agents in front of her as she ran towards the remaining trucks. Angels of vengeance have steel for wings, and her remaining wing had become razor sharp. She could not tell if the agents she hit were alive or dead. She did not care. A fought her way through dozens of agents, each part of her acting independently as a fighting instrument. Fists through blows that crushed noses and broke jaws. Elbows cracked ribs, shoved the jagged edges up into lungs. Feet crushed larynxes of any unfortunate enough to fall. And always, her deadly razor wings sliced furiously, shimmering with blood.
That was our guest today, Walida Emerisha, reading from the new anthology Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements. That was a piece she contributed to the anthology Black Angel. You're a beautiful writer, Walida.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And there's so much great writing in this book, even though some of the contributors had never written fiction before. Walida, do you mind briefly mentioning some of the social justice themes that the writers chose to explore in this collection?
Absolutely. And I think that piece is really, really important. I mean, our idea behind this anthology was to have activists, organizers, and change makers writing science fiction or fantastical stories that can help us build new just worlds. So the majority of people were not science fiction writers. But as you said, the majority of folks had never written fiction before. We chose folks that we knew were good writers, but we really wanted folks to kind of re-envision the way they saw themselves. And most of the folks that we reached out to were kind of reluctant in the beginning. There was definitely a lot of emails sent back, like, maybe you sent this email to the wrong person. We were like, no, we want you. But I think what was amazing and fascinating is that, you know, we asked folks to just think about it. And we came back to them a few weeks later, and almost all of them had not only come up with these incredible ideas, these fantastical stories to explore social justice issues through, but many of them had already begun writing 10, 20, in one case, 70 pages of a story. And I think that's because, again, you know, those folks who are doing the organizing, who are on the front lines of making change, are science fiction creators every single day. Mm-hmm. And they just needed the smallest permission to unleash their imaginations and allow them to really, you know, flow freely. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the stories folks came back with were just incredible. They cover such a range of issues, so many different worlds, literally, that have been created. And I think, you know, for me, each story is incredibly unique and occupies a specific place. So, you know, we have a story by Val Fee called Revolution Shuffle, which is about a zombie apocalypse, and it's set in an internment camp. You know, we have a story by Leah Lakshmi Piepsna Samra Sinha, who is an incredible transformative justice organizer and poet, called Children Who Fly, which is really rooted in this. It's also in a post-apocalyptic landscape, but rooted in the idea that folks who have survived trauma, especially sexual violence, and their ability to dissociate actually is the only force that can save the earth and heal the earth at that point. So trauma survivors are not shown as passive victims. They actually are the only folks able to heal this broken world in which all of us are struggling to survive. We have Alexis Pauline Gums, who is writing this piece, which really explores this society many generations in the future. So after a revolution has happened, after we've been able to institute many of these values and principles that folks talk about in social justice movements, but what would those folks have to say back to us in this day, which is what she calls the time before silence broke? And what would they make of our world? What lessons would they explore from it in sort of an archaeological exploration of this world that we live in and that we're struggling to change?
You know, so many of the, quote, futures represented in these stories, you know, it was easy to see how we got there. You know, what's happening today, that's the direction we're going. And so it was very sobering, and it was almost like, you know, like you mentioned, we were getting here and there, I felt like I was getting messages from the future, and I was being compelled, you know, why didn't y'all act now while you could, you know, before it's too late. And so many of these people in these dark futures, like just trying to find the light and get back to the way we all want to live, you know, they reminded me so much of the activists that don't give up today. You know, it's so important. We might feel isolated and like we're just battling these dragons that we cannot even begin to thwart. But we've, you know, that's the activist spirit. You don't give up. You keep trying. And this book reignited me, I must say.
That's wonderful. That's great. And I think it's really important also, as you said, I mean, these worlds and these futures in some cases that folks have created, you know, they're not utopian. Mm-mm. And we, you know, we actually feel that the ideas of sort of a utopia or dystopia are actually not very useful to us in terms of creating new just worlds and envisioning social change in the future. Because we feel like as long as there are human beings, there's no true utopia, right? And I think that's, we talked about Ursula Le Guin's book, The Dispossessed. I mean, that's the basis of The Dispossessed. Once you achieve the so-called perfect society, we're going to have to continually change and grow, right? I mean, again, the only lasting truth is change, to quote Octavia Butler. So there's no true endpoint. There's no utopia. But we also think it's incredibly important to note that there is no true dystopia as long as there is one human being left who can envision and believe and hope for a better future. And so, you know, we think that again, these writings, you know, these visionary fiction pieces are, you know, can be real and sometimes hard. A lot of Octavia Butler's work emotionally is hard because these worlds she creates are very hard. But there's always hope. There's always hope that if we act collectively, if we act with our principles and values lighting the way, we can build better worlds. And I think that that is very much the spirit that these writers in the stories for Octavia's Brood have captured.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Walida and Marisha, for being our guest today and for putting together this incredible anthology, Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements. Very thought-provoking, surprisingly funny, underscoring, you know, the place of humor in this work, you know, to help us cope and heal and keep moving forward. Walida and Marisha, how can folks get in touch with you and learn more about your work in this book?
Sure. Well, we have a website, which is just www.octaviasbrood.com. And there we have links to our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram, whatever other outer space social media platforms there are. We have a calendar with upcoming events. We just actually finished a 3-month tour, but we're going to continue doing different events, which are not just readings, but also writing workshops, strategy sessions, interactive dialogues, trying to engage in a multiplicity of ways to have not just the anthology, but these ideas really, you know, grow legs and move out into the world.
Well, thank you once again for being our guest. It was a real pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. You've been listening to Between the Covers. Our guest today, Walida Imarisha, talking about Octavia's Brood, science fiction stories from social justice movements. Thank you so much for listening to KBOO. Tune in next Thursday on Between the Covers. We welcome Lydia Yuknevich here to talk about her new novel, The Small Backs of Children. Up next, words and pictures.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. The community parade, Metamorphosis, will start at 10:45 a.m. There will also be artisan, craft, and community booths, sidewalk sales, live music, food, and more. Again, that's the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street going until 9 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at